You're listening to the John DePietro Show. What a moment in American history. Who at the White House said we need to send him out right away tonight? Now, I'm not sure it would have been better in the morning, but at least he could have been better prepared and he could have been rested instead of being the angry guy that we saw last night, right, telling you to get off his lawn. But let's go to some of the highlights.
Of the response in Gaza, in the Gaza Strip, has been over the top. I think that, as you know, initially the president of Mexico, Sisi, did not want to open up the gate to allow humanitarian material to get in. I talked to him. I convinced him to open the gate. I talked to Bibi to open the gate on the Israeli.
I mean, I'm sure people, you've heard this, but I mean, that of all times to refer to the Egyptian president as the president of Mexico, refers to the Egyptian president as the president of Mexico. And then him yelling, right? As far as he did have classified information and classified documents. And then him trying to get the laugh with Peter at Fox and the shuffling, it really is remarkable that his sister and Jill Biden continue to trot him out there. I mean, at this point, I mean, this is actually cruel. Come on. He would be perfectly fine as a retired man who had a successful political career. For crying out loud, he was vice president for 8 years, almost president for 4 years. But making him go through this right now, it's just... All right, let's go to Jill Biden. She sees him every day.
Is there a part of you that is worried about his age and health? Can he do it?
He can do it, and I see Joe every day. I see him out, you know, traveling around this country. I see his vigor. I see his energy. I see his passion.
There's the person that wants him to remain as president. Jill Biden, right there. I mean, that is just, this is, and then him even confusing color states.
State or green state. When I said, when we pushed all these programs, I said, I'm going to be a president for everybody, whether you live in a red state or a green state. When I said, when we pushed all these programs, I said, I'm going to be a president for everybody, whether you live in a red state or a green state.
Listen, I take no joy that the president of our country has become a laughingstock. And, I mean, how about if I were smart, I'd leave now.
If I were smart, I should leave now. Please, thank you.
That would be a good idea to leave. Listen, and this is the person, keep in mind, Governor McKee says, the best president Rhode Island has ever seen. So, but him yelling at the reporters, that did not play. Him trying to do the humor with Peter Ducey of Fox. If I had any memory, I wouldn't have, if I had a good memory, I wouldn't have taken or listened to you or taken your question. My memory is so bad I let you speak.
My memory is so bad I let you speak.
That's supposed to be a joke.
Your memory has gotten worse, Mr. President.
My memory is not good. My memory is fine. My memory, take a look at what I've done since I've become president. None of you thought I could pass any of the things I got passed.
See, that's the big line. Watch me. They just tell him to say that.
I just forgot what was going on.
This is ridiculous.
How bad is your memory, and can you continue as president?
My memory is so bad, I let you speak. That's
your memory has gotten worse.
You hear the nervous laughter, and that's exactly what it is, which is nervous laughter. They're not getting out of this one. I mean, they're just not. This, what we saw, I don't even need to pile on. This is not a matter of whether you agree with his policies or you disagree. This is about he is not physically up to the job. And the Democrat Party, they are kidding themselves and fooling themselves if they think that anyone right now is, in fact, up to physically, mentally performing the job. This is not a matter about policy. This is not a matter even of showing leadership. No one is even falling into that. This is a matter of there's no reasonable individual. And I was watching and CNN, they were trying to run cover for him. And it is only the Trump haters and the Biden real strong defenders are standing by him at this point. I'm looking at now John Harwood, journalist, public speaker. He used to be with the Wall Street Journal. He put this out. Biden's press conference showed the same thing his performance as office shown for 3 years. He can do the job. Mexico for Egypt meant nothing. But the GOP political apparatus, bad faith enterprise, mainstream press been knocked silly by financial political pressures. I don't believe that. It does matter. It does matter. So anyone that would, at this point, when you watch him, this is one of those things, to me, that he can't handle. He can't spin his way out. He's not going to get better. He's not going to get younger. He's getting older. There's nothing wrong with that. It's part of life. But he's going to be 82 in November. And anyone that thinks he's mentally and physically up to the job for the next 4 years, you're kidding yourselves. Because that number that is so high of people that don't feel he's up to it, it's only going to rise. So, wow, what a moment. Folks, you're listening to The John DePietro Show. The Lodge Pub and Eatery, 40 Breakneck Hill Road in Lincoln. Lunch, dinner, drinks in the lounge, especially this time of year. So much going on. They always have a nice crowd right there. Full bar, large dining area right there in the lounge. Easy to get to, whether it's lunch or dinner. A great meal is waiting for you at the Lodge Pub and Eatery. Think of this, since 1994. That's right, celebrating the big anniversary this year. I'll see you at the Lodge Pub and Eatery, 40 Breakneck Hill Road in Lincoln. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. It would seem that President Biden is not the only one who is slowly losing it. How about Governor McKee, Boston Globe, public borrowing, Tidewater Lander Soccer Stadium. Now twice as expensive, and it is closed. The city, state, private developer have closed on the financing for the Tidewater Landing Soccer Stadium, setting the project on a path completion in 2025 amid continued cost hikes. Year and a half since the state first approved the public borrowing, the cost to pay off the state's biggest portion of support for the project has more than doubled, from about $60 million to about $132 million over 30 years. But the deal, after delays, controversies, is done. We are extremely pleased to reach this important milestone, said the developer in a joint statement. The roughly $130 million, 10,000-seat stadium will be the future home of the Rhode Island FC, expansion team, second tier of soccer. City of Pawtucket, state of Rhode Island, the developer paying for the stadium, private development, will own it in the end. The complicated financing has seen multiple delays. They said they were upset on all aspects. But the amount of money to put 27, for Rhode Island taxpayers, the biggest ticket item is tens of millions publicly funded borrowing going into the project. To put about $27 million into the project, the state's Economic Development Agency agreed to sell bonds to investors. Investors would pay money up front for stadium construction. They'll be paid back with interest through state tax revenue raised in a broad swath of Pawtucket. But interest rates ended up coming in significantly higher. Upfront costs for borrowing, things like legal fees, capitalized interest, debt service, basically an emergency fund to pay back investors in case something goes wrong. Back in 2022, listen to this, the state estimated it would take $36 million in borrowing to raise $27 million to put in the project. I want to repeat that figure. In 2022, 2 years ago now, the state estimated it would take $36 million in borrowing to raise $27 million. When the state went out to the market to sell the bonds of October last year, it was planning to sell $48 million in bonds to raise the $27 million. And by the time the city actually closed on the bonds, the project's backers say they had issued $54 million in bonds. The borrowing costs are higher up front, also in the long term. The state in 2022 estimated the interest rate to pay back investors for the bonds would be 5.5%. They actually pay an interest rate of 7.5%. The project sponsors say they'll have a chance to refinance the bonds. The cost to pay off the bonds has also risen. When the state authorized borrowing $36 million for the project, it estimated it would cost $59 million in state tax revenue to pay them back in the decades to come. When the project's bankers were marketing $48 million in bonds, it was estimated to cost $110 million in state tax revenue to pay them back. It will take some $132 million in state tax revenue to pay off the bonds over 30 years, more than doubling the initial cost. Again, this is the Boston Globe. The project's backers emphasized the bonds could be refinanced or paid down early. Total boondoggle. Well, we'll see where this goes. I don't think this was a good idea. If this was such a good idea, then let a private market get into it. But at this point, this type of borrowing, and let alone with the amount of money that the bridge is going to cost, I just don't see it. Folks, you're listening to The John DePietro Show. You need a good plumber? I found the best plumber, JMB Plumbing. Call them today. All your plumbing needs, 401-743-9153. JMB Plumbing. They've been providing plumbing services for years. Skilled professionals stand behind their work. Guarantee you will be happy. Maybe it's repairing damaged water pipes, repair clogged pipelines, maybe replace a water heater, as well as all your plumbing needs. Call them now. It's JMB Plumbing, 401-743-9153. Nothing throws off your life or your home or your business. When you need plumbing service, you need someone reliable, someone who's professional, someone who'll handle the job and do it right. It's JMB Plumbing. Call them today. 401-743-9153, JMB Plumbing, and look for them on Facebook. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. Folks, joining us right now, he is the executive editor at Newsbusters. It's Tim Graham. Tim, welcome to The John DePietro Show. Anxious to hear your thoughts on the fact that President Biden is going to be skipping what has become, number one, a tradition within the country, which is the interview of the president on the network carrying the Super Bowl before the game. But more importantly, it is in a huge election year, and you would think the president would want this unique opportunity to speak to America.
Yes, you would. I mean, this tradition really kicked up with Barack Obama. He loved to do this interview. And usually it's very much a softball interview. The one I remember is when he and the NBC crew were testing the beer they were brewing at the White House. So that's what he's skipping.
Right.
But I think they're afraid of two things. They're afraid of just one question that's a little bit tough, and they're scared that he's going to say something silly to a very huge audience. You know, the way that he's been naming dead leaders of Europe, you know, he's going to probably start talking about quarterbacks that have been dead since the, you know, 90s. It matches their strategy to sort of hide him in general. This shouldn't be surprising, except for the massive audience he could communicate with.
Folks, again, we're speaking with Tim Graham, executive editor of Newsbusters at the Media Research Center. Now, Tim, as far as with President Biden and CBS, to go into this a little bit more, I believe they feel they're trying to spin it that they're seeking out, you know, less traditional ways. But it's hard to ignore the huge audience would be there. I don't think he'd have another opportunity before the election to reach such a large audience.
Absolutely. They're trying to say, well, we're talking to TikTok influencers and whatnot. Well, that might be good for a small section of voters under 30. But this is everyone. This is a massive audience of everyone, including the youth vote. So obviously, they're afraid of the entire country, every demographic, seeing him stumble and bumble. You just have to think that the Biden organizers are like, steer him around it. They don't want him engaging. They're afraid of what he's going to say. And the networks themselves, when he bumbles and stumbles and says, you know, I was talking to Mitterrand the other day when he's been dead since 1996, they don't play those clips.
Tim, as far as CBS, do we have an idea of maybe, would this be maybe a negotiation, meaning could the Biden White House have said, we'd like to have Gayle King, who's on the CBS Morning Show, or maybe some CBS reporter that they, you know, feel would in fact be favorable to the president?
I think so. I mean, Gayle King interviewed Barack Obama, and the interesting thing about that, of course, was that Gayle King was a donor to Obama. Gayle King has vacationed with the Obamas. Gayle King and Oprah were with the Obamas the night of the inauguration inside the White House. I mean, that's how, you know, that's how chummy it could be. This is why it's funny. It's one thing last year when Fox News or Fox had the game, and the Biden people are like, we're not going on Fox News. And remember, Fox at that time was trying to say, we have this new platform called Fox Soul. You can be interviewed by actress Vivica A. Fox, who voted for you, and they still wouldn't take the deal.
Wow. Folks, again, it's Tim Graham, executive editor of Newsbusters at the Media Research Center. We're talking just a couple more moments on the fact that President Biden is going to forego this interview. Now, Tim, is this also, if you look at, I can't recall when's the last time he sat down, President Biden sat down for an extensive interview, and it does seem as though they feel the potential gaffe that could come into play outweighs any benefit from the interview.
I think so. Now, remember, you could do a taped interview, which allows you to say, hey, guys, can we cut that part? You know, the last interview on CBS was with Scott Pelley for 60 Minutes. And it was we joked about it. It was like they were, you know, ushering him around, trying to make it as positive as possible. You know, this 60 Minutes used to be known as this hard-hitting show. And it was hard-hitting when they'd interview Trump. But when they interview Democrats, obviously there was a long string of Barack Obama softball interviews on 60 Minutes. And 60 Minutes has done the same thing for Biden when the Biden team has allowed them in. They could have requested Scott Pelley again to do a Super Bowl interview.
Sure.
They just don't want to do an interview.
Before I let you go, are there any other memorable presidential interviews? I can remember, like, Bill O'Reilly. Fox would let Bill O'Reilly, a Fox News channel, I believe, you know, do the presidential interview. But it did kind of become, the Super Bowl, as we both know, has just morphed into this incredible, it's really the only one of the few events where everyone gathers around the television to watch. It did become part of the tradition that the president would be on the network carrying it. But any memorable ones prior that come to mind for you?
Yeah, well, I think that Obama had the audacity to take on Bill O'Reilly not once but twice, I believe.
And, yeah.
And the funny part about this is the Biden team's now saying, well, we want to let just people enjoy the game. Well, we should underline that there's like a 3 or 4 hour pregame for the Super Bowl. And what generally would happen would be the game's at 6:30 and they would put on the president's interview at like 5:10 Eastern. So it's not like you couldn't wait. Like, I'll turn it on when they sing the national anthem. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Tim, how can people learn more about Newsbusters at the Media Research Center?
Thanks. We're at newsbusters.org. And, you know, also have other websites, mrctv.org, censortrack.org, where you can follow what we're up to.
Tim, big fan of your work. Keep it up. Great to talk to you, and we'll talk to you again.
All right, thanks.
All your oil needs, make it Henry Oil. Call Henry Oil today, 401-521-0200. Reliable, affordable fuel oil delivery. Call Henry Oil today. Fuel oil, diesel, gasoline delivery. It's Henry Oil, residential, commercial fuel oil delivery since 1947. They also have budget plans, service contracts, lock and cap pricing. You can depend on Henry Oil. Call them today, 401-521-0200. Serving most of Rhode Island and southeastern Mass. We got a long way to go with winter. Make sure that tank is filled. Call Henry Oil today, 401-521-0200. Henry Oil, a local family-run business since 1947 that you can depend on. For all your oil needs, call Henry Oil today, 401-521-0200. You're listening to the John DePietro Show. Well, there it was, for all the world to see. A president who is not up to the job, should not be there. You know, it is, as some people have described it, it reminded them of the uncomfortable conversation of having to remove, take the car keys away from an elderly parent. Let's play it. This is President Biden delivering his remarks.
Today about their look into my handling of classified documents. I was pleased to see he reached a firm conclusion that no charges should be brought against me in this case. This was an exhaustive investigation going back more than 40 years, even into the 1970s when I was still a new United States senator. The special counsel acknowledged I cooperated completely. I did not throw up any roadblocks. I sought no delays. In fact, I was so determined to give the special counsel what he needed, I went forward with a five-hour in-person interview over 2 days on October the 8th and 9th of last year, even though Israel had just been attacked by Hamas on the 7th, and I was very occupied.
Now, he starts off fine. That's, of course, the president. He starts off fine. Now, remember, though, this is all he's just reading prepared remarks. So there's a big difference in the fact of that he starts off and he's just going through the motions on this thing. And then, of course, where this thing goes off into and where it goes off into is far, far different. Because what, as everyone saw last night, and I don't think everyone watched it, and that's why I wanted to play the full sound of it. But okay, he's reading the teleprompter, but he can't handle any form of questions. Let's go back to President Biden last night.
Charges.
Again, him trying to go through the remarks.
This was an exhaustive investigation going back more than 40 years, even into the 1970s when I was still a new United States senator. The special counsel acknowledged I cooperated completely. I did not throw up any roadblocks. I sought no delays. In fact, I was so determined to give the special counsel what he needed, I went forward with a five-hour in-person interview over 2 days on October the 8th and 9th of last year, even though Israel had just been attacked by Hamas on the 7th, and I was very occupied. It was in the middle of handling an international crisis. I was especially pleased to see special counsel make clear the stark distinction and difference between this case and Mr. Trump's case. Special counsel wrote, and I quote, several material distinctions between Mr. Trump's case and Mr. Biden's are clear, continuing to quote, most notably, after giving multiple chances to return classified documents to avoid prosecution, Mr. Trump allegedly did the opposite. According to the indictment, he not only refused to return the documents for many months, he also obstructed justice by enlisting others to destroy evidence and then to lie about it. In contrast, he went on to say Mr. Biden turned in classified documents to the National Archives and the Department of Justice, consented to the search of multiple locations, including his home, sat for a voluntary interview, and in other ways cooperated with the investigation, end of quote. I've seen the headlines since the report was released about my willful retention of documents. These assertions are not only misleading, they're just plain wrong. On page 215, if you had a chance, I know it's a thick document. On page 215, the report of the special counsel found the exact opposite. Here's what he wrote. There is, in fact, a shortage of evidence that I willfully retained classified materials related to Afghanistan. On page 12, the special counsel also wrote, for another documents, the decision to decline criminal charges was straightforward. The evidence suggests that Mr. Biden did not willfully retain these documents. The evidence said I did not willfully retain these documents. In addition, I know there's some attention paid to some language in the report about my recollection of events. There's even reference that I don't remember when my son died. How in the hell dare he raise that? Frankly, when I was asked the question, I thought to myself, it wasn't any of their damn business. Let me tell you something. Some of you have commented, I wear since the day he died, every single day, the rosary he got from Our Lady of... Every Memorial Day, we hold a service remembering him, attending by friends and family and the people who loved him. I don't need anyone. I don't need anyone to remind me when he passed away or passed away. Simple truth is, I sat for a five-hour interview over 2 days of events, going back 40 years. At the same time I was managing an international crisis, their task was to make a decision about whether to move forward with charges in this case. That was their decision to make. That's the counsel's decision to make. That's his job. And they decided not to move forward. For any extraneous commentary, they don't know what they're talking about. It has no place in this report. The bottom line is the matter is now closed. I'm going to continue what I've always focused on, my job of being President of the United States of America. Now, thank you, and I'll take some questions.
President Biden, something the special counsel said in his report is that one of the reasons you were not charged is because, in his description, you are a well-meaning elderly man with a poor memory.
I'm well-meaning, and I'm an elderly man, and I know what the hell I'm doing. I've been president, and I put this country back on its feet. I don't need his recommendation.
That's totally out. How bad is your memory, and can you continue as president?
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Your memory has gotten worse, Mr. President?
My memory is not good. My memory is fine. My memory, take a look at what I've done since I've become president. None of you thought I could pass any of the things I got passed. How'd that happen? You know, I guess I just forgot what was going on.
Mr. President.
If voters have concerns about your age, how are you going to assuage them? And do you fear that this report is only going to fuel further concerns about your age?
Only by some of you.
Mr. President, you are criminal liability today.
Mr. President,
do you take responsibility for at least being careless with classified material?
I take responsibility for not having seen exactly what my staff was doing. It goes in and points out things that appeared in my garage, things that came out of my home, things that were moved not by me, but my staff.
Mr. President,
for months when you were asked about your age, you would respond with the words, watch me.
Many American people have been watching, and they have expressed concerns about your age.
That is your judgment. That is not the judgment of the press.
They express concerns about your mental acuity. They say that you are too old. Mr. President, in December, you told me that you believe there are many other Democrats who could defeat Donald Trump. So why does it have to be you now? What is your answer to that question?
Because I'm the most qualified person in this country to be President of the United States and finish the job I started.
Why are you refusing the names of world leaders?
I did not share classified information. I did not share it.
With your ghostwriter?
With my ghostwriter, I did not. Guarantee you did not.
But the special counsel said it.
No, I did not say that.
Okay.
He did not say that.
But, Mr. President,
let me answer your question. The fact of the matter is, what I didn't want repeated, I didn't want him to know, and I didn't read it to him, was I had written a long memorandum to President Obama why we should not be in Afghanistan. And I was of multiple pages. And so what I was referring to, I said classified, I should have said it was should be private because it was a contact between the president and the vice president as to what was going on. That's what he's referring to. It was not classified information in that document. That was not classified.
When you look back at this incident, is there anything you would do differently now? And do you think that a special prosecutor should have been appointed in the first place in both of these cases?
First of all, what I would have done is overseen the transfer of the material that was in my office, in my offices. I should have done that. If I go back, I didn't have the responsibility to that. That was my staff was supposed to do that, and they referenced that in the report. And my staff did not do it in the way that, for example, I didn't know how half the boxes got in my garage until I found out staff gathered them up, put them together, and took them to the garage in my home. And all the stuff that was in my home was in filing cabinets that were either locked or able to be locked. It was in my house. It wasn't out in, like in Mar-a-Lago, in a public place where, and none of it was high classified. Didn't have any of that red stuff on it. You know what I mean? Around the corners? None of that. And so I wish I had paid more attention to how the documents were being moved and where. I thought they were being moved to the archives. I thought all of it was being moved. That's what I thought. Now, what was the last part of your question?
Whether a special counsel should have been appointed in this case and in the case of your rival president, former president.
I think a special counsel should have been appointed. And the reason I think a special counsel should have been appointed is because I did not want to be in a position that they looked at Trump and weren't going to look at me, just like they looked at the vice president. And the fact is they made a firm conclusion. I did not break the law, period. Thank you all very, very much.
And here's where he starts to leave. He stops. He starts to talk, and now he shuffles back to the podium.
I'm of the view, as you know, that the conduct of the response in Gaza, in the Gaza Strip, has been over the top. I think that, as you know, initially the president of Mexico, Sisi, did not want to open up the gate to allow humanitarian material to get in.
Should have kept going.
I talked to him. I convinced him to open the gate. I talked to Bibi to open the gate on the Israeli side. I've been pushing really hard, really hard, to get humanitarian assistance into Gaza. There are a lot of innocent people who are starving, a lot of innocent people who are in trouble and dying. And it's got to stop, number one. Number two, I was also in a position that I'm the guy that made the case that we have to do much more to increase the amount of material going in, including fuel, including other items. I've been on the phone with the Qataris, I've been on the phone with the Egyptians, I've been on the phone with the Saudis to get as much aid as we possibly can into Gaza. There are innocent people, innocent women and children who are also in badly need of help. And so that's what we're pushing. And I'm pushing very hard now to deal with this hostage ceasefire because, as a, you know, I've been working tirelessly in this deal. How can I say this without revealing it? To lead to a sustained pause in the fighting, in the actions taking place in the Gaza Strip. And because I think if we can get the delay for that, the initial delay, I think that we would be able to extend that so that we could increase the prospect that this fighting in Gaza changes. There's also negotiations. You may recall, in the very beginning, right before Hamas attacked, I was in contact with the Saudis and others to work out a deal where they would recognize Israel's right to exist, let them make them part of the Middle East and recognize them fully in return for certain things that the United States would commit to do. And the commitment that we were proposed to do related to two items. I'm not going to go in detail, but one of them was to deal with the protection against their arch enemy to the northwest, northeast, I should say. The second one, by providing ammunition and material for them to defend themselves. Coincidentally, that's the time frame when this broke out. I have no proof what I'm about to say, but it's not unreasonable to suspect that the Hamas understood what was about to take place and wanted to break it up before it happened.
Now he shuffles back off again. Folks, again, that was President Biden. And by the fact he went back is when he made the big gaffe on the leader. I mean, the whole thing was a disaster. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. Propane Plus. Call them today. Heating and cooling in Rhode Island, 401-885-4209. In Massachusetts, 508-252-3359 for Propane Plus. Three generations you can always depend on Propane Plus for all your heating and cooling. Call them today, 401-885-4209. Three generations, they're available 24/7 for service and delivery, and they're going to serve you for a very long time. They have a great user-friendly website. You just log on at propaneplus.com, and then you type in your zip code, residential, commercial, Propane Plus, heating and cooling, always there for you. Give them a call today. In Rhode Island, 401-885-4209. In Massachusetts, 508-252-3359. The Johnson family, three generations, heating and cooling. You can always depend on Propane Plus. You're listening to the John DePietro Show. So controversy in Cranston, where now you have some activists. They're upset because of what's happening, where you had a Hispanic individual who approached Friday morning a 14-year-old girl who was going to Cranston East, and he tried to speak Spanish to her, and she said, he said to her something like, "You have a nice body," and then she said, "Excuse me, like, I'm only 14. He said, "That's okay." And he grabbed her arm. Now, she pulled away, and it's described as a Hispanic man speaking Spanish, and then they have his picture. Well, now some activists are upset over the fact that, number one, it was described as a man under the guise of you don't know what the gender is, meaning how that person identifies. And number two, they don't like the fact that he was identified as Hispanic. So I did a TikTok video on this, and I would play it quickly.
Breaking news out of Cranston, Rhode Island. 14-year-old girl grabbed by the arm as she was walking to school. There's the suspect, described Hispanic man, speaking Spanish to her. She's trying to make conversation, tell her she had a nice body. She said, "Excuse me, I'm 14 years old." He said, "That's okay." He tried to grab her by the arm. She broke away, told a crossing guard, and now police are searching for the suspect. Now, here's the controversy that is breaking out. Activists are upset because the description went out saying Hispanic man speaking Spanish. They would prefer that it should not say Hispanic or even man. What do you think? I think when a crime is committed, and again, why would that suspect grab a 14-year-old girl walking to high school by the arm and then trying to, who knows what was going to happen, most likely a migrant? What do you think? Don't you think the most descriptive description of a suspect should go out, whether it's white or black, Hispanic, whatever it may be? Controversy in Cranston. Manhunt is on for the suspect. A 14-year-old girl grabbed as she was just walking to high school. Cranston police are on the case. We'll be following it on the scene live stream.
You know, I find it, I'm not surprised by this. This has become the new way. Sometimes the media goes along with it. Most times, hopefully, that they do not. But it is kind of like the new way that they feel they might be offending someone if they put how they're described. If there's a bank robbery and or any type of robbery, if it happens to be a person of color, there's a lot of activists now. They don't want the description to go out that it was a person of color. In the past, they were saying you should just say it was a man that stole it. And many times, as I've pointed out of recent years, that a lot of times the media will go along with it. Not all the time. Now, because of the political correctness with the gender crowd, now they don't even like that if a gender is assigned, meaning in this case, Hispanic male. So I think it's, you know, I think it's foolishness. When a crime or suspected crime is committed, whatever the depiction, description of that individual is, if it's a white male, then the description should be it was a white male. If it's an Asian female, then it's an Asian female. If it's someone who is Hispanic, speaking Spanish, part of the description should be that it happened to be a male and speaking Spanish. Now, if in fact they catch this person and the person says, well, I don't identify as a man, well, that really has no bearing on the case. It's really just the depiction. To me, this is almost the equivalent of someone trying to argue that, you know, the suspect was described wearing a red jacket when it was actually maroon or pink or what have you. It doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is they have photos of the suspect. It was a 14-year-old girl, and her description was that he was speaking or trying to speak Spanish to her, and then this happened. So I find it ridiculous. I think the most important factor here is that they find the perpetrator, not so much trying to placate many of these activists. Folks, you're listening to The John DePietro Show. When it comes to insurance, you need a neighbor, a partner, and friend. You need Choppa Insurance Agency. They're located right on Reservoir Avenue in Cranston. Call today, free consultation, 401-900-INSU, 401-900-4678, Choppa Insurance, SIA. Steven, very experienced, whether it's auto, home, renters, business insurance, flood, recreational, umbrella, any other protection for your assets, Rhode Island and Massachusetts, Choppa Insurance Agency, your agency of choice. Call today, set up a meeting. They're so knowledgeable, can have everything under one roof. Call Choppa Insurance today, 401-900-INSU or 401-900-4678. Look for them on Facebook, again, located Reservoir Avenue in Cranston. Choppa Insurance Agency, your neighbor, your partner, your friend. One-stop insurance solutions. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. Well, the disaster continues regarding the bridge with no answers in sight, no end in sight. People have lost complete confidence in the leadership of Rhode Island Governor Dan McKee. So let's play. This is the latest now. East Providence officials still want Governor McKee to ask for emergency declaration. He can't declare an emergency declaration because the bridge has not fallen down. What part of this do these people not understand? Let's pick up some of the coverage with WPRI Channel 12.
Patrick, counselors made it very clear during that meeting last night that the bridge closure is causing several impacts in East Providence. During the lengthy meeting, it was revealed that the city council had sent a letter to Governor Dan McKee requesting a declaration of emergency in hopes to be given some assistance to the city. They asked the state for a few other requests that have already been done, such as compensating their traffic controls that they had to increase due to the bridge closure. Governor McKee recently met with some counselors, the superintendent of schools, the police chief, and the mayor to address their concerns after that letter was sent. It was revealed that the school department expressed several issues they are having with buses navigating traffic, and even one resignation of a teacher who could no longer be making the drive through the heavy traffic every day. One counselor expressed what his hopes are for the future as heavy traffic continues to plague the city.
At some point, whenever this is all done, that the state realizes an obligation to come back to East Providence and repair some of our infrastructure, our streets, sidewalks, curbs, things that are being damaged every day by no fault of any one person, but 18-wheeler trucks and traffic coming through in and around East Providence.
Now, during that meeting, a spokesperson with the city's police department also discussed some of the ongoing efforts that they have in place to alleviate some traffic throughout the side streets. For now, reporting live in East Providence, Kristen Burnell, 12 News.
You know what's amazing about that is I don't blame that poor teacher. I was unaware of that, that somebody's already resigned saying, I can't take this anymore. And I don't blame them. It totally throws off your routine. Who had noticed now when the governor's meeting with these people, he's trying to keep everybody in line. Understand what that is. He's just trying to keep everybody, hopefully, in the pew, all singing from the same hymn. And he's afraid that some individuals may go rogue and start to veer off and then start to criticize him. But how much longer is this going to be? And the cost, listen to the latest cost.
Material testing and police details for traffic control. This morning, we're also getting a look into text messages between Governor Dan McKee and RIDOT Director Peter Alviti in the days and weeks following the Washington Bridge breakdown. The messages were released as part of a public records request. The messages show that the two often asked to talk over the phone about the bridge rather than reveal details in text. Meanwhile, during an East Providence City Council meeting last night, counselors said that the bridge closure is causing an economic crisis in East Providence. They also addressed how the bridge closure continues to impact residents.
There is a huge ripple effect that is devastating people's lives on a large scale.
And RIDOT says that initial data shows that the new traffic pattern on 195 West is causing a positive impact on residents who live near the off-ramps in East Providence, but they're still giving one more day to test the study. That's the latest in East Providence this morning. Kristen Burnell, 12 News.
I believe the cost is $860,000. Now, I'm going to defend, and I'm not saying I need to or that it was derogatory, but I could understand where Governor McKee and Director Alviti were saying, why don't we talk? I know some people were saying, well, that way they kind of get around that there's no record of what their conversation was. But, you know, why would you, you know, you don't text when you can speak. And you can get through a conversation much faster if people are not texting. So I'm gonna cut them some slack on that. I can't imagine the two of them just going back and forth compared to let's have a conversation. But this is, I want to remind people, this is all the early stages. This is all just the, you know, this is all just the first inning, as a matter of fact. So I believe that people are still trying to come to grips with, especially ground zero is East Providence, kind of come to grips with what has happened and how much this is going to impact them. So, and the cost to the state is just beginning. And I want to, this business that the federal government always comes in and they're going to bail everybody out, I see no evidence of that. Now, I want to go back to this. So the bridge closure has already cost close to $1 million. And this is just, you know, the beginning now. Let's pick up again. Channel 12. Here we go.
12 News reporter Kayla Fish joins us from East Providence with the latest. Kayla?
Well, Shannon, after repeated requests for information from Target 12, a RIDOT spokesperson revealed that the closure of part of the Washington Bridge has cost the state more than $750,000 so far. And that's an open tab that's far from being closed. $860,000. Oh. That's how much the Rhode Island Department of Transportation says the Washington Bridge closure has cost the state. That estimate, as of February 2nd, includes costs for bridge inspections and in-depth examinations, material testing, and police details for traffic control. Those police details, like the ones seen each night in East Providence, costing the state almost $85,000 alone. But it's not just the state bearing the financial brunt of the closure.
It's an economic crisis in the city.
The impact also being felt by East Providence business owners. Tuesday night, city councilors got an update from the Small Business Administration, which has received more than 110 applications for emergency loans from businesses impacted by the closure. Only two have been approved so far, but a spokesperson for the SBA cautioned that it's a slow process.
I'd like to give the businesses in our community some reassurance that there is diligence and urgency in their needs.
Counselors also addressed the hardship being felt by residents.
There is a huge ripple effect that is devastating people's lives on a large scale.
Now, we also have an update on the new traffic pattern on 195 West that was implemented by the DOT late last week. Initial data from RIDOT shows that the change has had a positive impact on those who live here in East Providence near some of the on-ramps for the highway. RIDOT says they plan to keep that traffic pattern in place for at least another day to keep studying it. We're live in East Providence tonight. I'm Kayla Fish, 12 News.
I think the bottom line is there's just no way out of this. They can try different patterns, try to somehow amuse the residents, but I just don't think there's any way out of this. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. It's My Health, 1099 Menden Road in Cumberland, diagonally across from Davenport Restaurant. Stop in and see Marie. That historic white church. Shop local, inside, all quality products, vitamins, herbal remedies, trusted companies. They understand quality, integrity. It's My Health. It's all about your health. Local products, ICE, honey, maple syrup, beef fresh gum. You know, they carry over 250 bulk herbs, teas, and spices that can be purchased by the ounce, plus box herbs and teas, hemp and CBD products, and much more natural skincare products. Stop it and see Marie at It's My Health, 1099 Menden Road in Cumberland. It's all about health for you, for your family. There's vitamins for children, all different types of teas, all different types of spices. Boy, what a difference it'll make. Shop local. Stop it and see the Queen of Health. It's Marie at It's My Health, 1099 Menden Road in Cumberland, diagonally across from Davenport Restaurant. Right in that historic white church. It's all about health. It's all about your health at It's My Health. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. Folks, I always tout our website just because it has exclusive stories and video. It has links to on-the-scene live stream. Remember, there's no vowel I. It's DePietro.com, DePietro.com. You can also reach me that way if you'd like to get in touch with me. DePietro.com. Log on, and then links to Facebook and YouTube. Everything we have, it's all waiting for you right there at the website. AEP Services. They take great pride installing fences of all kinds, vinyl, wood, aluminum, chain link, experience, quality, integrity. Call AEP Services today for a quality fence, home or business. 401-228-7190. 401-228-7190. Residential fence, commercial fence, steel, wood guard, rail. They have it all. Beautiful aluminum product, decorative. landscape. It adds a lot to it for your stunning property. Call the experts today, AEP Services, 401-228-7190. Residential or commercial, why not enjoy your backyard, a little privacy, or maybe keep a pet or young children inside? Remember, they also have fences. They're resilient, water-resistant. Call today, 401-228-7190. Free quote, AEP Services, the fence experts, 401-228-7190.